This is a special encore rebroadcast for International Women's Day, which originally aired in 2005. Host Paul O'Brien interviewed Jean Shinoda Bolen about her book, Urgent Message from Mother, Gather the Women, Save the World.
Good morning and welcome to Pathways. This is your host, Paul O'Brien. Every Sunday morning at this time, we invite you to join us for a visit with selected leaders in personal and cultural transformation. Today on Pathways, we are privileged to be visiting with an internationally known author, speaker, and workshop leader who draws from the spiritual, feminist, Jungian, medical, and personal wellsprings of experience. Dr. Jean Shinoda Bolen is a Jungian analyst, psychiatrist, and clinical professor at the University of California Medical Center in San Francisco, and is the author of several books, including The Tao of Psychology, Goddesses in Every Woman, Gods in Every Man, Ring of Power, Crossing to Avalon, Close to the Bone, The Millionth Circle, Goddesses in Older Women, Crones Don't Whine, and her latest book, Urgent Message from Mother, Gather the Women, Save the World. Today we are going to focus on the message of that book, Urgent Message from Mother, Gather the Women, Save the World. Good morning, Jean, and welcome to Pathways.
It's a pleasure to be here this morning.
My first question is, who is Mother and what is and why the urgency?
Well, Mother is Mother Goddess, Mother Archetype, Mother Instinct, Mother Power, Sacred Feminine. And it's clearly Mother Earth speaking to us about maybe there only being a decade or so as a window of opportunity to change the direction humanity is putting the planet on. Mom's in trouble.
So you're referring to ecology, the environment, war, all the things that are coalescing these days.
And the effect on the children.
Speak to the effect on the children.
Because I'm feeling that the major, one of the major elements in why there is not peace in the world and why there are so many terrorists is that kids are traumatized, abused, and no one's looking out for them. The mother instinct that would nourish and take care of and protect kids isn't a priority in the world.
And why is that?
Because we've got hierarchy where domination over others is the general rule. You're either predator or prey in a patriarchal world that is more concerned with the people at the top amassing power over. And, you know, the people at the bottom really are collateral damage. And who always gets it in the end? The poor people whose kids don't matter as much. And they grow into terrorists or juvenile delinquents or just very unhappy people who, you know, if you're abused, one of this unfortunate psychological side effects is that you grow up to be someone who dominates someone else if you are leaning in that direction, or you become habituated to being a victim. And that's really not what people came into this world to do. We've got such beautiful potential as human beings.
So your book, the book has been described as being about feminine spiritual activism. Why do we need the women to save us?
Because the culture is unbalanced. That until women with concern for connection and communication, and mainly about, again, looking after the vulnerable, all the things that we do as individual women, we manage to look after the kids, get food on the table, keep the house clean, maintain good relationship with neighbors. What we do as women in our lives is what women as a gender need to do for the whole world. And it's you know, well, let's stop being, what is it, kitchen, what is the German word for children, kitchen, children, church, a patriarchal church with the whole idea that there is a male god at the top that makes all men superior to women. That's a major message that Mother is coming through. Look at the Da Vinci Code. There's a fascination with the sacred feminine. It's like what has been suppressed in culture since the Greeks is, I feel, coming up in the culture. And it says that divinity is masculine and feminine, that mother has been missing from the religious agenda of the world. And so what do we have? We have a power-oriented father at the top. I mean, all three of the major religions, Judaism, Christianity, and Islam, all come from the same dysfunctional family headed by Abraham. So everything is about fratricidal war in which every religion sanctions war against the other. But we're all related to one another. And even in the story of the Bible, these are half-brothers. What's wrong with this picture? There is no mother that keeps peace in the family. Father isn't doing a great job of it.
So what would you have women do? What is the call to action behind this book?
Oh, it's a big one. Gather, save the world. And it has to do with what we did as women in the United States in the late 60s and 70s. All it seemed to be that we did was gather in groups. They were called consciousness-raising groups. One friend or two friends called other friends together and say, you know, let's talk about what we are learning about sexism and about patriarchy. And so there was a reading, the literature, writing literature. There was support for each other to tell the truth of their own lives and to realize that the politics of the world made personal life for women a one-down, guilt-oriented, it must be my fault if bad things are happening to me or if I'm not advancing in the world, it must be my fault, it must be individual. And what came out of that was the whole thing about the personal is political. And out of that came all kinds of activism that didn't come from the top. It came from circles of women supporting each other, first of all, to go home and stress, let's have an equal relationship. So on a personal level, egalitarian element entered into dialogue. But activism was supported by the groups. You know, if you wanted to march, march. If you wanted to hold a conference, you know, your sisters got together and helped you to do that. And then as women could go to court and could speak up, again, the expression was speak truth to power, you had the support of a circle or a group to go do what that meant, whatever that is. And what we found is that a grassroots movement that appeared to be just women talking to each other changed the world in a decade. Amazing how it affected what we now know about gender differences, about our ability to do all kinds of things. So I'm proposing something that is already going on, but bringing it into consciousness, a recognition that there is a call to women to go back into groups. But the particular form that I wrote about in the Man's Circle and that I'm advocating an urgent message for mother is it be circles with a spiritual center, meaning to say it's an egalitarian. A circle is an egalitarian form. And what if in the center of that circle you put something that symbolizes the wisdom and compassion that is an accessible element that humanity has always had and is a part of each woman in the circle as well? And what if they proliferate like strawberries do in fields with runners going out and more happening or geometrical progression? We then have what Malcolm Gladwell called the potential for tipping point. We get to critical mass and the culture shifts. When a critical number of people start looking at things differently, believing in things differently, then what was resisted before becomes a new norm.
Now, what happened? I mean, we had all this wonderful grassroots activism in the 60s and 70s, and then it seemed to have gone away with the aging of the baby boomers, or maybe it didn't go away. Maybe it just wasn't reported. But why does it seem like there's been a lapse in terms of grassroots organizing and movements?
I think it's twofold. I think one, that a lot was gained and just became the new norm. Mm-hmm. And so that the daughters of the women of that first round of the women's movement truly can say, I can be anything I want to be, which is amazing. But then patriarchy, the powers that be, makes any word that speaks about an empowered feminine a devalued word. So feminine is the bad F word these days. So women say, well, I'm doing this. I want to be an astronaut, but I'm not a feminist. And what's sort of what's wrong with this picture? It's like the word liberal. Liberal has gotten to be a bad word. And what, you know, a liberal is someone who has some compassion for people. Suddenly it's a bad word. Feminist is a bad word. And then the reason I wrote a book called Crones Don't Whine, or Put Juicy Together with Crones, is that's the only word for a empowered older woman is crone. But who wants to be a crone if the adjective with crone is not juicy?
Well, juicy crone is an archetype that we haven't heard very much. Sounds like an improvement.
It's a definite improvement. And there are lots of us. We're the generation that was influenced by the women's movement. And, you know, when in the mid-adult years, you're busy juggling family, kids, job, et cetera, and you hardly have a moment to be in your own head and hardly time to keep up with friends very much. It's really when you get to be what used to be terrible. You know, the empty nest period was supposed to be dreadful. Well, one of the great secrets of life is that they are one of the juiciest years in active women's lives. That postmenopausal, you know, which is 50 plus or minus 5, you can have 30, 40 good years left. And you belong to a generation that has never existed on this earth, at least since the Greeks. First of all, we live longer than we've lived longer as American women than any peoples have ever lived as a whole group. So we'll live to potentially to 80 or 90. And we also have the potential to realize how lucky we are because of things like breast cancer. Most of us at 50 or 60 have lost contemporaries, friends who aren't here anymore. And so we know how lucky we are to be alive. And there's something about gratitude that stirs a kind of deep spirituality to make a difference, to make the life that you have matter. This is one of the major challenges that come from Mary Oliver's poem is, doesn't everything die at last and too soon? Tell me, what do you plan to do with your one wild and precious life? Well, at 55, for example, that's a very good question for women. All this energy, resources, education, what do you do with it? Well, one of the things I'm hoping women will do would be to get behind a United Nations 5th Women's World Conference. If the last one in 95 in Beijing had 50,000 women there, here we are with nothing on the drawing boards that there'll ever be another Women's World Conference. If in the next 3 years we can lobby our governments in the UN to have one, I could well imagine 150,000, 200,000 women with the internet, allowing communication before, communication after. What an amazing influence we women could have on the governments of the world and the situations of the world.
Now, you talk in your book about the cult of masculinity, and you've got some information in there on the relationship between that and monotheism. Could you speak to that briefly?
Well, I actually don't call it the cult of masculinity. I'm back to that old familiar word called patriarchy.
Mm-hmm.
And patriarchy is based on the capacity, you know, it's a belief that men have dominion over everything else because they are made in the image of God in the monotheistic way of viewing God somehow as a kind of Zeus or Yahweh that rules from the heavens, and men are made in his image and therefore aren't in relationship to earth and women and children and animals and things, but are meant to have power over. And once that model gets moving, then everything is used as an object that is expendable. And what I think truly shift that image was seeing the Earth from outer space and realizing how beautiful and vulnerable and how much this is home. And the more people get it that we're one family, but this family has been minus the influence of the maternal.
What difference would it make if women had an equal say in setting priorities and settling conflicts, considering that they have a greater capacity for a maternal nurturing?
One of the things is it dilutes the alpha male testosterone adrenaline up for battle side of things, because women behave differently under stress. That hormonally, under stress, men's adrenaline goes up and it's enhanced by testosterone. Under stress, women want to talk to each other and do what the UCLA researchers have called the tend and befriend reaction rather than the flight or fight reaction. So women under stress look after the home, the kids, the laboratory, straighten up things, drink coffee, and talk. And as they do that, their stress level goes down and the oxytocin or maternal bonding hormone goes up, which is enhanced by estrogen. So what if women were present whenever peace accords were to be worked out instead of just men? Women set a stage for it being more a circle experience where each person is in relationship to each other. And they bring talk in as a bonding kind of experience. In Sierra Leone, there was another one of those fratricidal war things that was going on. And because of the UN Resolution 1325, which is called the Women, Peace, and Security Resolution, which in principle requires or requests or advocates that women be present whenever conflict is involved, including war, the folks of the Sierra Leone Accords women were being invited to be part of the peace process. And this was reported at a UN meeting that I was attending. And it was reported that one of the leaders of the war leaders was in great contempt over this new addition of women to the discussion. And he said, outrage, why do we need the women here? You know that they would just compromise. And there was this whole duh.
Oh, my God. What a horrible thought.
What a horrible thought. Yeah, because women are not losing anything to give way, because it's not in women. The whole one up, one down has not been what you learn from the time you were three or four. And boys on the playground learn this early. They learn that bigger boys make you feel humiliated if you ask a question. There's just a whole lot of, I mean, you learn that to get along, you've got to ignore what is going on, and so that you don't get extruded from the guy group. And so men can't bring peace to the world by themselves. Mm-hmm. They really do need the partnership of women as a gender. And I know that there are women who are just as power-oriented as men, as many men are. And I also know that there are many men who are as nurturing as women are supposed to be. But what I do know is that women as a gender are being left out of the equation of making a difference in this world.
Now, how does that work? I mean, women are a majority of the population, and yet we're not seeing any appreciable increase. Well, we've seen some increase in the level of representation in government by women in the House and the Senate, but not anything near commensurate to the real numbers. Why aren't women voting for women, or why aren't women running and getting the support of other women?
Well, we only have 14% in the combination of Senate and House of Representatives. Mm-hmm. And we need at least 30% for the women's perspective to come into a legislative body. And there are 15 countries in the world, 11 of them in Europe, and the other Rwanda and South Africa and Costa Rica, that have over 30%.
Uh-huh.
And until there's a sufficient number of women represented, the women, in order to be respected in the Senate or House, have to request that they go to the heavy-duty committees, judiciary, defense, things like that, rather than the natural ones like education and welfare, because those are the discardable bottom of the budget items. And women still have to present themselves as being as strong as men in order to gain respect in their bodies, in their legislative bodies. And women as a gender are often prefer to work within a group than to have one star representing all women. And besides, the women at the top often, I don't want to put them down, because we have gained so much that as in 1985, there were no women in the Senate that had been elected on their own. I mean, you know, it was day before yesterday. In fact, we didn't get the vote until 1920. So we're not doing badly, but we could certainly do better.
Now, let's talk about the sacred feminine and what difference it would make if divinity were experienced as feminine or as being both masculine and feminine after 5,000 years of patriarchal monotheism.
Prior to patriarchy, from the archaeological evidence, there was a time in which there wasn't a dominator culture and where there was a lot of goddess artifacts left behind. And in the animal culture, you and I had been talking about the bonobos like chimpanzees, the closest to human in the DNA. And these are primates that make love, not war. And it isn't a patriarchal culture. There's something about patriarchy which is almost like it is toxic. It hardens men in power to not be in touch with the feminine. Anything that is like a woman is bad. Now, if divinity were seen as both male and female, if there was a mother divinity that looked after the vulnerable of every, you know, when the young of all species, then to tap into that source of spirituality would be very different than when there's only a god that has power over. Now, actually, one of the things that I am really concerned about is that Christianity, based on what Jesus had to say, is a very feminine message. It is about love. It is about not judging. It is about caring for the least of them. And I am appalled at how to be a Christian these days is to be a fundamentalist right wing. Let's oppress people. Let's follow Robertson, who suggests that we assassinate people. What is it? You know, what about the message, thou shalt not kill? What about the message that we should love one another? I mean, I remember being a kid in Sunday school where the message was God is love. Well, the God that the three major fundamentalist religions are following now is not about God is love at all. It's about God is war.
God the Avenger.
God the Avenger, yeah.
Even Jesus is going to come back and smite people.
Now,
and the horses they're riding too.
Right. And the kind of religion that enjoys the suffering of the unsaved and feels superior as they look down on some people being tortured in this netherworld of hell.
Well, that whole Look Behind series is really appalling. 60 million books sold of that nature, of that story you just told. Yeah.
And it's because there is a sort of a sense that we will get even. We will have our day. Rather than here on this beautiful planet, we have the option of making this a beautiful place or a horrible place.
Do you think it's too late? I mean, in your view of the state of the world, can you be optimistic?
Yes, I actually can.
And why is that?
Because I really think there's an untapped source of peace, which is the gender, the feminine gender that's needed to step up. And I feel that there is a kind of sense that it is moving through like the ground, that there is a, that it may not take too much when people are at a place just before a liminal place, just before something comes into consciousness, then if it's sort of like the women's movement came about because individual women were dissatisfied with the way things were and felt they weren't entitled to feel that way. So they felt depressed on top of everything. And then the message started to come out about sexism and about stereotypes and about, of course, the women who didn't fit in with the plan would not be happy with it. And then suddenly it freed them to be themselves. And if women as a gender began to speak up and speak for what they love, for example, if women who were the mothers of children in elementary school worked together as a group so that no bullying of children was allowed in school, and a bully would be seen as a child calling out for help, that school would not perpetuate from the very earliest the dominator role that ends up with Columbine and ends up with it being okay for the jocks to humiliate the other guys who are a little weird. And so in the fantasy of young men and boys, there is the I'll get evening, I'll get a gun, the great equalizer. And then we have guns because of the NRA saying everybody should have a gun who wants one. Well, what's wrong with this picture? Now, in Urgent Message from Mother, Gather Women, Save the World, I tell a lot of stories of ordinary women who made a difference when they acted together to change something for the better. And recently I heard a wonderful story that exemplifies that. Why Charlotte, North Carolina was the only city in the South that peacefully integrated. And it did because in the summer before integration, three women gathered together in the kitchen and said, we've got to do something so when schools integrate in the fall, it would work. And those three women drafted their friends, and 45 women in Charlotte called up every single parent in the whole school district. White women who would never have had personal talks with black parents did. And they all worked together so that the children would be safe when integration happened. And it worked.
There are so many beautiful stories in this book, and I wish we had a lot more time to talk about them. In fact, we're completely out of time right now, but I want to highly recommend that our listeners check this book out. It's Urgent Message from Mother, Gather the Women, Save the World by Jean Shinoda Bolen. And Jean, you've got a website too, and I'd like to give you the opportunity to share that with our audience.
It's www.jeanbolen, JeanBolen.com.
Thank you so much for being with us today.
It's been a pleasure, and the time zipped by.
It sure did. And I want to thank our listeners for tuning in to Pathways this Sunday morning, and hopefully every Sunday at this time, for a visit with leaders in personal and cultural transformation. On behalf of KBOO Radio 90.7 FM and the Pathways program, this is Paul O'Brien signing off.